Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Celebrating the royal wedding today, the Duke and Duchess. Anyway, Mike Blewett along with Kevin Walsh, FST, got hour number two coming up here. Kev, what did you think of that one?
That was good. I tried to let you go. I wanted to see perhaps if how long you would go if I just didn't laugh, so I held it back for it. I think the first one was my favorite.
I don't have enough material, I guess. I should have worked on it more, but... I was going to do a thing with a poll, which American athlete would be the most likely to attend the royal wedding, but it got blown up for me because Serena Williams is there, and that one makes the most sense because she's won Wimbledon however many times.
Yeah.
She's got 23. How many of hers were Wimbledons? I'm trying to think. She's won. She's got to win it like six times, right? No. More, how many, how many times do you think she's won Wimbledon?
9 billion. Honestly, I 15? I don't know.
Seven singles titles.
Yeah, I don't know.
Seven singles titles at Wimbledon. She's got a whole bunch of doubles as well. So, yeah, she won the doubles one, two, three, four, five, six times. So, there you go. So I was going to do a poll and I like LeBron or Jeter or Tom Brady, like our most famous people, but no, Serena's there, and that makes the most sense. So she's a celebrity there too, right? So we did a whole bunch of baseball and football. I figured I'll update you on my most recent draft. I've been doing this draft. It's a slow draft, and it is every bit of that slow draft. It is just about wrapping up. It was a 6-round rookie draft for my dynasty league. I'm going to be doing many more drafts here in the next couple of weeks to keep you folks updated on where players are going, ADPs, all that kind of stuff. Obviously, we had the Mark Ingram news, and that's impacting Alvin Kamara. Mike Clay from ESPN put out some news this week about the Colts backfield and how that could be a shakeup, because some people are expecting it to be Marlon Mack as the starter, but he's saying, and Nyheim Hines comes in as a potential challenger from NC State as a rookie, but he has actually gone out on a limb and said that Jordan Wilkins, their fifth round pick, not Nyheim Hines, their fourth round pick, will lead the Colts in touches. So that was kind of an interesting piece of news that set the Twitter world ablaze for however long, but I think at the end of the day, my hesitance with this team is that they have addressed the offensive line here over the last couple of years, but I don't think it's all that great yet. Quentin Nelson is a great addition. But I think at the end of the day, with the Colts, you're going to see a committee. So I don't know that any of them are all that valuable. And he may be right on Wilkins. I have Mack as a keeper in a league. I can't remember. I think I'm keeping him at a really good value. It's the type of league where you get a 3-round penalty for keeping the player. And I'll probably have Marlon Mack in like the 10th round, which is a totally appropriate value. You'll get drafted much higher than that, probably too high. But I'll be able to keep him there and extract whatever value I can out of him. And I'm not going to give up a lot for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right now, right, like everything is so kind of just feeling it out. I think I agree in terms of it being more committee-based, and that would still pull me in the direction of Hines, just because skill set-wise, I'd still anticipate him getting a lot of the catching responsibility. And I think with the Colts, that would probably be what's most valuable, at least in terms of those running backs.
Yeah, so last week I talked to you about this draft that I was in, Dynasty League, which means you keep the whole roster. It's a 45-man roster, pretty intense. Mike Florio from the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, who you can hear each and every day on Fantasy Best Friends Forever from 2 to 3 on the network. He also produces many shows as well, excellently. He had the first overall pick. He picked Saquon Barkley, and he's new to this league. So he and I were chatting for a while about it yesterday, because I was in studio just chatting with them. And it takes a lot to get going in this league. He was dealt a bad team. He passed it off, and he's trying to learn about it. It's an IDP league and all this other kind of stuff. So I'll tell you what my six draft picks are and why I added each of them. So I had Ronald Jones. I needed running back desperately. I was the eighth pick. He was the eighth running back off the board. So obviously would have liked Saquon or Geis or Royce Freeman or, you know, maybe even Rashad Penny. But going with Ronald Jones, hopefully he wins that job, which I think he has every opportunity to do, and that the Bucs can block a little bit better than they have for the running backs the last couple of years. So Ronald Jones, my first pick. Daron Payne, defensive tackle from Washington. Now, this league heavily gives heavy bonuses to defensive tackles. It was engineered that way because in most IDP leagues, defensive tackles are worthless, and they wanted it to be a league where all the players matter. So if you get a really dominant defensive tackle, he can be one of the highest scoring players in the entire league. At picks 3 and 4, I went with Antonio Callaway, Cleveland wide receiver, because I think he's going to have I think Corey Coleman may find his way out of Cleveland either this offseason or over the course of the next 12 months. So I think Antonio Callaway has an opportunity there. Let me see. Yeah, I'm trying to look up what their depth chart is. Yeah, so their depth chart right now is Josh Gordon, Jarvis Landry, Corey Coleman are the starters. Behind them, Ricardo Lewis, Rashard Higgins, Jeff Janis, and Antonio Callaway. So I think you can see through that they're drafting over basically Rashard Higgins and Ricardo Lewis, Corey Coleman, which they drafted Lewis, Higgins, and Coleman all in 2016. I think Callaway is a guy with a ton of talent, with some off-the-field issues. It's why he fell to the fourth round, and I think he can have an opportunity to work with Baker Mayfield. They're both rookies. You tend to see combinations come together like that, and I don't expect much out of him this year, but this is a dynasty league. I can put this guy on a rookie squad for a whole year, and it's a shot at potential. Then I went with Simi Cobbs Jr. Out of Washington. He's a wide receiver, another guy that I can put on the taxi squad for a while. My wide receivers are okay, so I'm willing to take chances on these guys that they can develop into something down the road. Running back is a much bigger issue for me because I was really only rolling with Mark Ingram. And now he's suspended. So for the first month, I'm really going to be heavy on Ronald Jones or some other pickup or a trade that I have to make before it starts. And then my last two picks were Terrell Edmonds, safety out of Pittsburgh, their first-round pick. I just need to replenish that long-term. He can go on the taxi squad as well. And then Rams linebacker, Agbania Okoronkwo, who I've read some good things about, and despite the fact that he was a fifth-round pick, he has an opportunity here. They obviously moved Alec Ogletree over to the Giants during the offseason. That was more due to fit than anything else. I just think he has an opportunity here to get into this rotation. If there happened to be an injury to Samson Ebukam or Matt Longacre, somebody like that, I think Okoronkwo would have an opportunity to put up some numbers. But you have to remember, Mark Barron put up some good numbers last year at inside linebacker for them. You just have to remember that this defensive line is so dominant that this isn't going to be a linebacking core that's going to rack up tons and tons of tackles, right? You have Brockers, Sue, and Aaron Donald up front. it tends to slow down the production of a scheme like this. You know, four linebackers in the middle, you're not going to have one guy racking up tons and tons of tackles. It's just not the way typically the numbers fall. So we'll see. That's my six. You know, I there are some other guys I missed on. Minkah Fitzpatrick, I've said over and over, is like my favorite player in the draft. I just didn't feel like I could draft him at the time, and I may regret that. So I just wasn't sure, Kevin, how many numbers Minkah Fitzpatrick will pull up with Rashad Jones there in Miami as a rookie, or even in the second year. I don't know that Minkah, as good a player as he may be from an IDP standpoint, I don't know that he tallies tons of numbers.
And the decision was between him and Jones or him and Payne?
I think I drafted him. No, he went later than that. I think I drafted Cobbs over him. I think Minkah ended up being a fourth-round pick just because people really do try to hammer away at the offensive side of the ball. Yeah. When there's injuries on offense in this league, you are in trouble because it gets really thin. I don't hammer away at the offensive side of the ball as much as others, but people do. And right now, if you look at people's rosters, they have like 10 wide receivers right now. They have to cut it down a little bit before the season, but people just don't want to let guys like that go. They'll even have a guy that they know isn't going to play for the majority of the year on their active roster in the hopes that in 2019 he'll be something. Like Cameron Artis Payne was a zero basically in fantasy last year. I guarantee he's not been on the waiver wire in this league since he's been drafted because people are looking a couple of years down the road where he could maybe be a productive running back. Or there's enough talk about him, example, this offseason that they can move him for a pick or another need on their roster. So that gives you some sense of what's going on with that team and those particular players. A lot of interesting stuff can happen in drafts like that. But again, the running backs flew off fast and furious. Eight running backs in a row before it got to DJ Moore and Christian Kirk and Calvin Ridley and Michael Gallup and Anthony Miller. So that's the entire first round was eight running backs, then five wide receivers, then Bradley Chubb, then Cortland Sutton, then Lamar Jackson. So Lamar Jackson was the first quarterback off the board in that league, which is kind of interesting.
I still think that you should be feeling pretty good about the Ronald Jones pick. Like, I still think that he could end up having I think he could have a really nice season in Tampa right away. So I think that you should feel pretty good about that. Actually, that was one of the things I noticed when you did send that over last week, kind of just the draft order that had happened to that point, that Lamar went first. And I was initially just like, oh, that's kind of surprising. But then I thought about it, like, fantasy-wise, like, maybe that's not surprising at all. Like, maybe that's exactly what it should be.
Yeah, especially in a league like this where you're going to put the guy on the practice squad for a year. You don't have to take him off. The team that drafted him won. Did they win the title last year? Yeah, he won the title last year. So his quarterbacks currently are Kirk Cousins and Joe Flacco. So he kind of owns the Baltimore quarterback situation right now, and he has Cousins. So it's a total developmental thing. All the running backs that he wanted were gone. Again, this guy won the championship last year, so I can't criticize for a pick like that. I remember a year that I won the championship, I ended up drafting your boy, Matt Barkley, because I was like, all right, long term, maybe he's going to have an opportunity to get some snaps. That didn't happen, but it's okay. Like, you know, if the NFL GMs get it wrong 50% of the time in the first round, I'm sure as hell going to get it wrong at least 50% of the time. So
I actually it's all heard... good.
So I know. Go ahead.
I heard something. It was on one of the national sports talk shows. So I didn't know necessarily how much there was to it. I actually forgot to kind of do the deep dive. So I didn't know if you've heard this, but they were talking about Lamar to Baltimore, and apparently there's already the conversation that they're going to be putting in a specific package to kind of get Lamar on the field year one. If I heard that correctly, like perhaps I didn't misheard and I'm just kind of misreporting here. But that's what it sounded as if that the Ravens are going to see if they can implement something to use Lamar right away, just kind of like a special package year one.
I don't have a problem with it. I think some people are going to bristle at it because, like, why don't you just let the guy play quarterback? Just insert him in there if you think he's good enough. But obviously they're not going to throw Flacco out unless he plays badly. Clearly he's not going to get a re-up on his deal, and then it'll just be Lamar's team. But I don't have a real issue with that, to get him on the field to spark something or to keep people guessing. You know, Philly does some unique stuff with play calling. They don't take Wentz out, but
well, that's what I'm saying. This would
they do some unique stuff with play calling. They could do stuff like that. I don't really have a problem with it.
I just think that I assume, though, that means that they're going to take Flacco out, like maybe let Lamar run a couple of specific plays. Like that sounds kind of college-esque. It's just something that, because we last 2 weeks back, I think it was, we spoke a lot just about Big Ben and the comments that he made regarding Mason Rudolph. I'm not sure if that's as bad as the fact that Joe Flacco is just outright ignoring Lamar Jackson. And, I mean, if they're going to put plays into where Lamar's going to just sub into the game second quarter, run a drive, like, that could be really, really toxic in Baltimore, especially if they're not winning.
Well, you know, unlike some of the other situations, you know, Roethlisberger with Mason Rudolph and, you know, a couple other ones in New York, I don't think there's any other way for Joe Flacco to read this. Like, it's 100%. Over for him in Baltimore.
100%.
It's just a matter of time. So this is the last year of his deal, and they're just going to move on from him after this. There's no other way. I should say it's the last year of his deal. No, wait. Next year, if they cut him post-June 1 cut next year, they would save $18 million. There'd be $8 million of dead money, which I think they'd be willing to move on. But it's either this upcoming year or next year is the last year with Joe Flacco on the team. So it's Lamar Jackson's team, 2019 and after. It's Mike Bluid and Kevin Walsh. We'll be back right after this.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Day of the Royal Wedding. Not watching it anymore. My wife had it on.
Is it still going on?
Turn that off. I think there's coverage until like 11 o'clock. It started at 4 o'clock Eastern. It's going on until 11 o'clock. They're just partying and showing all that kind of stuff. I don't know what's happening with the wedding. I'm just watching baseball highlights from last night. So, let me give you a sense of what's going on for the schedule today. We're here until 12 Eastern. Then from 12 to 3, it's In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. And then from 3 to 6, it's Weekend Fantasy Update. And that's Joe Galina and George Kurtz. So, 3 to 6, you'll hear those guys. Good stuff. As Kevin alluded to last week, we are also moving to Sunday. So you'll hear us from 9 to 12 each and every Sunday on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George will fill in when I'm not here. I just had some stuff as the schedule moved. I'd already had some stuff previously planned. So I'll be here most Sundays, but missing a few. Be here every Saturday for the most part. with K Dubs, and JP is filling in admirably this weekend, producing, because our other producer Rob is graduating from Iona College this weekend. Correct?
Yeah, yeah. So Rob getting it done. So good thing for the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks to JP for hooking up God Save the Queen and all that fancy stuff. So you had a conversation you wanted to talk about regarding Dak Prescott. He had some comments or something this week, and we'll get to Julio Jones in a minute as well. But what was your comment about Dak Prescott that you wanted to get to?
So this week, Dak was just kind of talking to reporters and made the comment that he wants to be the best quarterback the Cowboys have ever had. And, I mean, something like that, it's not that it's necessarily jarring, right, but it got a lot of attention because it's Dak and because it's the Cowboys. And it's the kind of thing that, I mean, a player is supposed to say, right? Like, they're not supposed to say, oh, yeah, I hope I'm just good enough. Like, he wants to be the best ever, and that's admirable, and it makes sense. What kind of caught my eye, though, was just – what this response, the question that kind of triggered it. And the reporters were apparently talking to him about the idea of him locking up, a super big quarterback contract coming up soon, because the way his contract worked is he's really only under contract now. He has this year and then next season. And I just started to think about really what is realistic for Dak Prescott. Like, if I had to give you the two extremes of to choose from, if is Dak Prescott going to go down as the greatest Dallas Cowboys quarterback of all time, or Dak Prescott's not going to be the quarterback of the Cowboys in 2 years? They're both extremes. But if you had to choose between the two, I think I personally may end up choosing the latter and say that he wouldn't be on the Cowboys. And it's just kind of, to me, it was almost jarring in a way, because if I had asked that question after his rookie season, nobody could have envisioned you even making some type of case that Dak would not ever be on the Cowboys. He had arguably the greatest rookie season of all time. They were the one seed in the NFC. They were 13-3. And he even played great, even though they lost that game to Green Bay. And it's just, the narrative has somewhat flipped, and I felt like it was kind of a way to take into perspective the way we view these quarterbacks, but Dak more so specifically, just this concept of, you know, if you had to choose between those two extremes, is it more likely that Dak Prescott went down as the greatest Cowboys quarterback of all time, or Dak Prescott wasn't the Cowboys quarterback in 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, it would be the latter for me too. If he cracked the top three, that would be pretty amazing, right? Staubach and Aikman and Romo being the top three. I would put him in that order, by the way. So that would be impressive if he got into that conversation. I think his rookie year, as you stated, was amazing. They were controlling the ball in a really significant way. I think it was a perfect way for a rookie quarterback to develop. It didn't put him on. It didn't have him slinging the ball all over the field. And then last year, you saw some challenges, but he still produced 28 touchdowns to 13 interceptions. That was without Zeke Elliott for six games. Clearly, he can improve upon that this year. Look, I'm not pushing Dak out of the way, but did I think some of the stuff that was said about him when he was a rookie was premature? Of course, yeah. I thought it was a little overstated. His yards per attempt was 8, which is really good when he was a rookie. He had 3,600 yards. He had 23 passing touchdowns. Let me see what he did rushing in year one. Again, 6 touchdowns. So he accounted for 29 touchdowns and then 28 last year. But the interceptions was the big difference, right? He had 4 as a rookie. He had 13 in year number two. And the yards per attempt went down. Again, he was missing Zeke Elliott for 6 games. Completion percentage went down somewhat dramatically as well, down to nearly 63% when it was up at about 68%, dropped 5 full percentage points. So I think you have to give him this year to see how the development goes. We got Zeke Elliott back, and maybe it falls somewhere in the middle, which would be pretty good. If a guy's completing passes at a 65% clip and again, 29 touchdowns and, say, 10 interceptions, I think you can live with that. I think that's good quarterback play. Now, that's just going really broad numbers. We don't know, and I'm not going to say, wow, if they go 3-13, it's all his fault. Like, I have no idea. I don't think Dallas has done a great job this off season, but they're going to win the same way they tried to win a couple of years ago. The defense still needs help, but they're going to try and do what they've done when they've been successful in recent memory, which is keep the defense off the field, just manage it. And I think that they'll have some success. Do I think that the Cowboys look like a playoff team? I don't. I don't think they look that way. I think I like the Giants to bounce back fairly strong after last year. And they could challenge Dallas for like a 9-7 record, something like that, with the Eagles leading the way. But this has been a funky division, right? We've seen division winners of that particular division turn over just about every year.
Yeah, I actually saw something that did somewhat catch my eye. Lewis Riddick of ESPN, who I think is really, really good. They had him on for a segment, and he ranked the quarterbacks in the NFC East. Wentz was one, Smith was two, and he had Foles at three. And I think then it was Dak at four, Eli at five. And it was just, it was one of those things that it just, it was so mind-blowing to see the outlook of that division. It was almost just like, I mean, think about how insane that quarterback ranking is from a year before. Like, Kirk Cousins is no longer in the division. A backup quarterback is the reigning Super Bowl MVP and is viewed as third. Wentz is now all of a sudden the clear-cut number one. Prescott's fallen back to four. Everybody's waiting for Eli to leave. It's one of those things where, yeah, the NFC East is incredibly strange, but it's just, it even made me think about the quarterbacks within the class of Dak, right? Like, Wentz was a guy who I think a lot of Eagles fans felt really, really good about his rookie year, but it seemed that, at least amongst the more national media, the consensus was he was nowhere near as good as Dak, right? And then that all of a sudden had a drastic shift, but he's now having the Super Bowl, reigning Super Bowl MVP play behind him. Jared Goff looked like he was going to be the bust of all busts. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was Jake Seeley who was just saying that he's one of the worst quarterbacks he's seen, and it was completely justified. But all of a sudden, he gets a really good offensive coach in there, and now he's considered a pretty good quarterback, like a stable quarterback that they're going to have moving forward. And then it even made me think about these rookies, right? Like, Watson lit the world on fire, but he's coming off an injury. Maybe it's not the same. Trubisky was kind of meh, but they've made a number of upgrades to their roster. So maybe Trubisky has this big type of year. Like, we're all kind of waiting to see what happens with Mahomes. So it was just one of those things where it's such a simple comment that typically is just like, yeah, he's a competitor. Like, that's what you expect. It started to have me thinking just about a number of the younger quarterbacks in this league and just the way it can so quickly shift on you in just one season.
Yeah, I mean, according to ESPN scoring, Dak Prescott finished 10th overall in fantasy play last year. He tied with Ben Roethlisberger to the decimal point. 260.7, again, with the 28 touchdowns, which matched Ben. So Ben had 4,200 yards to Dak's 3,300 yards, but, you know, obviously rushing yards and all the other kinds of stuff as well. So, you know, I think that's probably your outlook for Prescott. I'm trying to think who can take it, who can jump over him. Jared Goff finished right behind him, as did Blake Bortles. Case Keenum in Denver now. Would he have an opportunity? I think Denver's going to try and run the ball early and often. Matt Ryan took a step back last year, really rough from a fantasy standpoint. He only had 20 touchdowns last year. It's kind of amazing to think Ryan only had 20 touchdowns, so he could conceivably jump up there. But I think that's what you're looking at. Dak Prescott's end of the QB1, early QB2 conversation. Does he take a massive jump on the touchdown numbers? I don't see it, because Zeke Elliott's going to be controlling the pace of play there. So I think if you can get back closer to those rookie year numbers, nobody's going to complain about Dak Prescott. Is he going to be seen as an elite passer? No, I don't see him in that conversation, but I don't think that's what Dallas is looking for. You know, I eschew the term game manager, because I think it's just kind of disrespectful to the quarterback that is running the system, right? But The offensive coaches have to know their limitations. T.O. has plenty of comments about Jason Garrett this offseason, says they've been basically been stuck and they've been stale and stuck in the same place for the last couple of years because of Jason Garrett, so no love lost there. A lot of Dallas fans don't like Jason Garrett. They call him the clapper. They think he's not really good late in games, and I think there's been evidence of that. But we'll see. They're sticking with this. I think Jerry likes to have Jason Garrett there, and they're comfortable with it. And we'll see if Dak can bounce back a little bit, get the completion percentage up, and throw a couple of more touchdowns. But, you know, I didn't see anything last year that has me kicking him out of his starting spot anytime soon. But if he was really bad this year, they'd probably think about it. So, speaking of Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, Julio wants a new deal. He is set to miss OTAs looking for a new deal. I think it's something that probably caught some people off guard. But Julio, look, he's a player that has suffered from a lot of foot injuries. I think people are fantasy fans that have him in dynasty leagues and in keeper leagues are concerned. His contract runs through 2020. So while he has plenty of money left, he's going to get paid $10.5 million this year, $12.5 million next year, then $11 million the year after that. I think Julio is looking for a little bit more long-term security, but he's locked in for his 29, year 30, and age 31 seasons.
I don't really know, like, if you're the Falcons, like, do you have to move quickly on this? Because you just said it right there. You have him under contract for, you know, and it's decent money considering what NFL players make. Like, I mean, if he says he's not going to play this season, obviously then you have to have a much different conversation. Like, OTAs are OTAs. I'm somewhat of a feeling of these, like, elite players, like, I don't want to risk injury. Like, if there's just a way to have Julio come into the facilities and do a checkup just to make sure that, you know, everything checks out, he's healthy, he's, you know, making sure that his body's in shape and all that stuff. That way, the first time you see him, all of a sudden, like, what the heck happened here? What were you doing? You can just kind of make sure that he is working out and staying in shape. And I don't necessarily know if I would even need to worry about Julio Jones at OTAs. And I don't know how much they have to worry about this contract unless it got to the point where he's like, you're not going to see me until I get a new contract. Like, I'm even starting to get to the point with the Odell Beckham stuff where it's like, yeah, I don't know if I need to see Julio Jones play a preseason game. Like, I'm just not sure. I need to see Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham and Le'Veon Bell and these guys in preseason games. Like, I don't know if we need that.
Yeah, so Jones posted four straight seasons of at least 1,400 receiving yards. He wants an update to his contract, which is scheduled to pay him $10.5 million this year, according to Ian Rappaport. He sat down in 2015 to sign his deal, which is a somewhat backloaded contract, with his largest single salary coming in the second to last year of the pact, which is next year. His average annual salary, 14.25, places him eighth in the league at the position, behind Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, crazy, Jarvis Landry, A.J. Green, and Devontae Adams. So I think part of it is, A, who just got paid a lot of money in the NFL, the most ever?
Matt Ryan.
His QB, right. So that's a little bit in his face. He probably looks at that. He's eighth on the list. I just mentioned the backloaded part of the contract.
He probably thinks he deserves some of Matt Ryan's money.
Well, look, when it's in your face like that, I'm sure your camp starts talking and be like, we need some long-term security like Matt Ryan has.
For sure.
With the $100 million of guarantees. And I think Julio probably realizes, and fantasy owners that have him in keeper leagues realize, that these foot injuries aren't going away. They haven't sapped him of his ability like they did Dez Bryant, but I think when you have a backloaded deal like that and you're constantly suffering from foot injuries, you just start to wonder, like, you know what? If Dallas can cut Dez Bryant, I think Atlanta could consider cutting me if they feel like they have a younger, cheaper option. And when you have these backloaded deals, like I just mentioned, 20, nearly 20, it's 24 million backloaded into the last 2 years. Like, what if he suffered a foot injury this year? They can just cut him, and $24 million will be cut from him. So I think that's the type of thing he's probably thinking about. While it does seem premature for the Falcons to do it, and I don't know that they will, who knows? Maybe they attack another year on, give him some guarantees to make sure that he is going to see some of those last 2 years. You could do it that way, right? Just shift some of the guaranteed money to this year if they have room and give him a little bit of security and say, look, you know, we want you here, but we're not going to sign you to another 5-year deal to make sure that you get through until you get, we'll see you play at 30 and then we'll give you a deal. If you're Larry Fitzgerald, then sure. We'll give it to you. But the foot injuries pop up every year, and he's constantly managing snaps and managing game time because of those injuries. So we'll see. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more football after this. We'll talk a little bit about some running back depth charts and more on FST on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blue and Kevin Walsh are back after this.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
We're back on Fantasy Sports Today. I almost said the Roto Experts because I was reading the Roto Experts during the break. A lot of little pieces of news this time of year, right? In between OTAs and figuring out what's this committee going to look like, what's that committee going to look like. We talked about the Colts earlier and their running back situation is likely to be a committee. Reading another little story about the Lions expecting to have a committee approach as well going into this season. So for those of you that are big Kerryon Johnson fans or think LeGarrette Blount can get into the end zone a whole bunch of times, I think that for this year, Kerryon Johnson I kind of liked as a potential. In fact, I was eyeing him in that rookie draft I mentioned earlier. I can see him as a potential good long-term situation, but right now, I think the Lions are just going to be all about the committee because you got a bunch of guys here with a decent amount of talent. Amir Abdullah was a second-round pick just 3 years ago. You got Kerryon Johnson is now a second-round pick. They bring in LeGarrette Blount. They have Theo Riddick there, who's a pass catcher. So that's four solid to go along with a offensive line that has been improving in recent years. I'm going to do a write-up on all the offensive lines sometime here in the next month and give myself a sense of how they improved here. So they drafted two more guys this offseason, first-round pick in Frank Ragnow. They had Taylor Decker was a first-round pick a couple of years ago. They signed T.J. Lang last year. They drafted Terrell Crosby this year. So they are trying as much as they can, which is a brutally long stretch of not having had a 100-yard rusher. That actually may continue for a while because they're sharing the ball around, but they're trying like hell to gain some balance with this offense.
I like what they've done to the offensive line. I do think at some point they probably need to commit to someone. Like, I think that would be that'd be nice to see. And maybe that is Kerryon Johnson, right? Like, they did spend a relatively high draft pick on him. He was picked before Darius Geis was too, right? So it must have been something that they were ready to address. I think Amir Abdullah already voiced his frustrations with kind of the pick in a way and just probably not happy with the outlook that that means for him. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Abdullah wasn't really getting the job done. I think that Kerryon Johnson has a relatively positive outlook for the year because I do like what they've done with that offensive line.
I mean, they finished 7th in the league last year in points scored, 13th in yards. But rushing, 31st in rushing attempts, 32nd in yards per attempt. And they had 10 rushing touchdowns, which was 21st in the league. So clearly this team has been the same for a while. It's on the arm of Matt Stafford, hell or high water. And I think personally, it's why they've struggled a bunch. I've said this before on the show, and I'm not saying that it's Matt Stafford's fault, but I think they were too reliant on him to make plays in the fourth quarter. They play a ton of close games, and that's why they keep ending up 8-8, 9-7 every year. It's like if you get to the fourth quarter and you just want your QB to make the plays to make up for the mistakes that you made in the previous three quarters, you're going to win some, lose some. He can only be so good. You cannot play all these tight games and not be controlling the pace of play and then just expect them to win. And I'm looking at their wins last year, a 35-23 win, a 24-10 win, a 14-7 win, 30-17, 30-24, that was the Browns, 27-24, 24-21, 20-10, 35-11. They beat the Packers in kind of a meaningless game there at the end of the year. But, you know, a bunch of close games in there, and I think when you're the seventh highest scoring team, clearly there's defensive issues there, but maybe you help the defense by being able to run the ball a little bit better.
I'm not, by the way,
of the opinion that you have to have balance. I just do think this team could use balance in order to help the defense.
Remember when their defense was like the best fantasy defense for the first, what was it, like 4 or 5 weeks or something like that?
Yeah, that's kind of an anomaly though, right?
No, it was. It was one of those strange things. I will tell you this much. I don't know how much you've like dived into this stuff. I've just kind of done like an outside look of just how some of these divisions will look. And NFC North is going to be tricky, right? Because, like, Rodgers is back, Cousins shows up. The Lions are one of those teams that they're always fake good. And the Bears look like one of the most improved teams of throughout the entire NFL. So I think it's actually going to be...
On paper.
Sure. I mean,
I will stress on paper for the Bears.
But isn't that
always on paper?
I
think people are going to be on that bandwagon, and I'll be fading the Bears. That's how I see it going right now. Because I think it is too much all at once for it to happen. I don't blame them for adding a whole bunch of weapons for Mitch Trubisky. They drafted, I mean, they obtained Allen Robinson. They drafted Anthony Miller. They obtained Trey Burton. They made a change or two on the offensive line. They drafted James Daniels. So I do like the fact that, and they actually drafted Roquan Smith. I thought that he was a great complement to the additions that they made during the offseason. Mm-hmm. I just think with the new coach and all these new players, it's a lot to expect for it to all line up in year one of that transition. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, but let me just ask this. What would you necessarily say the difference is between that and Goff and the Rams from last year?
It's a great point. That would be the perfect counterpoint to my argument there. But I have a tremendous amount of faith I had in Wade Phillips in order to fix that defense. And I was totally surprised that Sean McVay was able to pull that off. And I would be just as surprised if we saw a similar turnaround with Trubisky and this Bears team. I thought McVay did a great job. And I thought the way Goff played, I wasn't one of the people like, he's terrible and they should consider trading him for a fourth-round pick. I mean, that stuff was going on last summer. You have to remember that. Like, they may have missed on Goff already and maybe they should trade him. That was actual talk going on. And that was way premature. He played better than I thought, Goff. And I thought Robert Woods was a better player than he got a chance to show in Buffalo. And Watkins didn't do anything there last year. And I thought Cooper Kupp was a nice compliment. And then Todd Gurley's really super talented. And I was one of the one thing I did say about the Rams, I really trusted in Phillips, and I love the fact that they added two offensive linemen that had a combined 20 years experience, Andrew Whitworth and Sullivan, John Sullivan. Those guys had 20 years of experience, and a major part of Gurley's struggles in 2016 were the offensive line and Goff struggles too. So they fixed that. It is very difficult to predict how offensive line changes will impact you, but I love the fact that they made those moves when they added a left tackle and a center, and it kind of brought everything together. And Gurley went off as the MVP of the fantasy league, offensive juggernaut.
Yeah, it's one of those things where my hesitations are, I like the moves they made. I totally agree, right? Like, it is tough to expect that much in year one. It's just, even if you're like, all right, I think the Bears take a step forward, like, how far can that step be? Like, the Vikings, I'd say, clearly still have the best roster. The Packers have Aaron freaking Rodgers, and they've made improvements. I love their first two picks and getting Jair Alexander and Joshua Jackson, pair of corners that, honestly, both could be their starting outside corners day one. And, I mean, even the lines.
Right. And if you have to play, by the way, if you're in an IDP league, let me interject. If you play in an IDP league that you have to use a corner, consider those guys because they will get picked on a lot. The one thing, if you have to use corners in IDP leagues, or if you're in an IDP league where it's kind of deep and you might have to end up using a corner instead of a safety, safeties typically rack up a lot more tackles and more points. But if you have to end up using corner, it's a good idea to look at rookie corners. And you say, well, those guys get beat up and they get picked on. Yes, that's why you want them. They have many more opportunities to make plays, which could lead to interceptions, but very often leads to passes defensed and potential interceptions. And just overall, if they're getting burned a lot insofar as getting a lot of passes caught on them, they're having to make all those tackles. So that is a little bit opposite of what a good veteran corner would see, you know, which wouldn't be a lot. Like, Jalen Ramsey is a great player, but he wouldn't necessarily be a very good fantasy player because people are going to avoid him.
Yeah, it's one of those things, I think, in terms of the NFC North. I think it was 2 years back, maybe Wentz's rookie year or the year prior. I'm not positive. But I think the Eagles finished 7-9, but I think they were like last place in the NFC East, where they could all be fairly serviceable. Again, it's just how much could you expect when you look at who else is in that division? Like, if they were in, say, I mean, a lot of the NFCs are really good. If they were in like an NFC North situation, like, maybe you make a case that the Bears could be better than the Ravens, right? Like, maybe you could do that. But I don't know how you can necessarily say, oh, I love what they've done, they're going to be better than Aaron Rodgers and then the team that was in the NFC Championship that added Kirk Cousins.
If I were picking the Bears, it would be third or fourth right now. Like, maybe they can get past the Lions. But
I like what the Lions have done. Like, I don't necessarily hate what the Lions have done
either.
Yeah,
same. That's what I'm saying. It's a maybe. Like, I still don't. If the Bears finished fourth again with a 7-9 record, that wouldn't really surprise me.
No, I think that's kind of what
behind
we're looking
at. Behind the Vikings, the Packers, and Lions.
I think
that's entirely possible. That division's gotten a lot tougher in a short period of time than expected because all of Minnesota's defensive draft picks have worked out.
Yeah.
They're really good defensively.
Absolutely.
They're getting Dalvin Cook back. They added Kirk Cousins. Doesn't matter what you think
about
Kirk
Dalvin
Cousins.
Cook so often.
It's going to be an improvement. So, I think they're another team that could control the clock a little bit. Now, they have had offensive line issues. That's another team that's addressed it. 2 years ago, when Sam Bradford broke the all-time completion percentage record, which was a farce, they had one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen. So they worked in the last 12 months to try and fix some of that. And Pat Elflein and Riley Reiff, and they drafted Brian O'Neill this year, so they're trying to improve that. And if they can keep Kirk Cousins clean and Dalvin Cook gets going, they're going to be able to control the clock, and that defense will be able to light it up. You know, they could be the best defense in the league again. They were one of them last year. You can make an argument they were the best. So we'll see. But you're right. I think the Bears, even if they improve, may not be even sniffing the playoffs. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, I just think with the way the NFC is, like, and I don't want to harp on it too much, like, because, like, we're going to probably break down a lot of these divisions as we get closer and closer. But it's just, to look at, like, an NFC North, right, or an NFC South, whatever it may be, and then just look at the disgrace that is that AFC East, where I think it was Mike Clay put out his projections for the draft order 2019. Three of the bottom
three of them
four.
In the top five.
Right, or three of the top bottom five. where three AFC East teams, like, it's just, you know, it's funny. The NBA, there's a lot of that talk always, right? Like, oh, do we need to break up the conferences? I just wonder if at any point, and probably not, right? But, like, probably not. But I just wonder if at any point anyone's like, maybe we need to do a reshuffle of some things. I think it was The Ringer who did a really big piece on that last year just about like how they could reshuffle some divisions. And I don't anticipate it because the rivalries are too important and things of that nature. But it's just...
Yeah,
I guess maybe I'm just mad the AFC East is so trash.
Yeah, I mean, it's helped the Pats during this run. It's the most historic run in the history of the NFL. No question about it. I'm a Steelers fan. This is the greatest dynasty in the history of the NFL. It's been going on for 17 years, and it's still chugging along. They're going to be a favorite to get one of the favorites to get to the Super Bowl again, much to everybody's dismay that it isn't a New England fan. But
we can say that in part because of we can say that in part because of the AFC East, right? Like, we can admit that what they've done is unprecedented.
It is part of it,
and part of it is this AFC East, like. I don't even necessarily love what the Pats have done.
It's made it easier.
It's made it easier. Like, we know for a fact, of all of the divisions, the Pats will win their division. Like, if you want to get crazy and say, oh, I think the Ravens are going to make a big step forward. I think that the Eagles are going to maybe take a step back, and I think the Giants are going to have a huge leap forward. I love what the Niners have done. Rams are overhyped. Like, all of these, there's no scenario where someone with any respect for themselves steps in front of a microphone or even has a conversation with a buddy and is like, oh yeah, Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill are going to take the Pats to task. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I'm sure Vegas odds reflect that as well. So overwhelmingly to win the division. I was a little surprised that Mike Clay had three of the teams in his top. You might be right. It might be top four, but certainly in the top five. Only because, I don't know, I do think the Bills are going to take a step back. I think Miami is kind of lost in the weeds. They're in a weird, like, it's Gase's third year, but they're kind of blowing it up now. Like, I just don't get it. And he says he likes Tannehill, and then they didn't really draft a QB to replace him. So I don't quite get where they're at. But I think the Jets can improve from 5-11, but he doesn't seem to think that.
He had them picking one, right? Again, I think.
Maybe. Yeah, he might be right about that. So, we'll see on the Jets. It wasn't my first thought that the Jets will be markedly worse, but maybe the thought is that they're going to throw Darnold out there and just let him eat whatever is coming his way. There's plenty of holes in that roster. I get it, but. Maybe the thought process is that they played way over their heads last year to get to 5-11, which most people would agree with. And maybe they'll regress back to where they should be, a 3-13 team. Remember, people going into the year last year thought the Jets would be one of the worst offensive teams
ever
in the history of football.
I agree.
And they proved to play above that level. So
I have the order quickly.
Maybe there's some regression there.
If you'd like, Mike Clay's projected 2019 NFL draft order: Jets 1, Cardinals 2, Dolphins 3, Bills 4, New York Giants 5. Strong disagree on
man,
the Giants.
He's down on the GG, man. Yeah, he's down on the Giants, but I appreciate his work and everything. It doesn't mean I have to agree with him. Mm-hmm. We could come up with some arguments as to why the Giants could bounce back. I would not pick two of those teams in the bottom five, but. I can sign off on Miami, maybe even the Bills. And the Cardinals are going to have a rough season. I think it's tough. They just traded for a corner yesterday, but there's many more holes than that. And I think that Josh Rosen is a guy that's going to take a ton of lumps this year. I think it's going to be maybe not 1989 Troy Aikman or 2002 David Carr, but it may not be far behind. So, Godspeed to Josh Rosen. So Kevin and I will be back. We'll wrap up NFL segment before. No, actually, we're getting to the NBA next in hour number 3. Kevin and I on FST talking NBA next. Back after this.